everybody, and welcome to the SmackDown Summary. It is It's late. It's late because I went to Canada for a holiday, and I'm very jet lagged, and I can't keep a schedule. It's not Sandra's fault this time. It's me.
Yeah, I saw Steve Decker post on the Inside the Ropes Facebook community blaming me and my internet, which is actually a totally fair assumption because most of the time it is my fault that things are late. But not this time.
No, it's me this time. So sorry about that, folks. But haven't had any real time off since December. So I thought I'm owed a wee holiday. So I hope that's fair. Excuse that. We'll get Retro Raw done hopefully tomorrow at some point. And then that'll be up as well. And then we'll be back to normal. So SmackDown, this is the SmackDown Summary episode 51. Next week will be a year since we've done it.
Crazy to think about. A year since the first awful, like, terrible premiere of SmackDown Live, where Robert and I just, you know, became angry smarks on the internet and hated everything about SmackDown Live. And I was like, why the fuck am I on Team SmackDown? This is bullshit.
And don't worry, at the end of this, we will talk a little bit about Talking Smack getting cancelled.
Boo.
But the show opens with a very good recap video of last week's Battle Royal to become number one contender for the US title against Kevin Owens, AJ Styles winning, and then it goes to the footage from Madison Square Garden, some really cool footage of AJ winning the belt, and then like fan cam footage and tweets and different things of AJ becoming the new US champ. That leads to AJ making his entrance in the building. He talks about being the new US champ. He's got a t-shirt to prove it. And he said he'd never call himself the face of America, but since Kevin Owens looked like a monkey's butt, he considers it an upgrade. He said that it wasn't long ago that somebody was talking about proving the worth of the US title by making an open challenge. Time to bring it back. He said the US title has been overlooked many times and he wants to stop that. So he calls anybody out for a US open challenge, and John Cena's music hits. He comes out. Cena wants to be the first guy for the open challenge. Charles Robinson runs down. They ring the bell. Greg Hamilton starts his introduction, and right before the match can start, Kevin Owens interrupts. So before we get to Kevin Owens coming out and stuff, what did you think of the idea of AJ Styles coming out and Cena being the first guy to answer the open challenge and the sort of bait and switch that they did?
I popped so hard for this. Like, I really like the idea of AJ Styles bringing back the open challenge because it's kind of a continuation of what Kevin Owens was doing, right? Because Kevin Owens was sort of pretending to do an open challenge because he would say, you know, I want to defend the United States Championship against some local jabroni, basically, right? Like, he always wanted to defend it against someone from this town so that he could, you know, pretend to have an open challenge and pretend to be like John Cena, but actually fight against nobody. So that he can ensure that he wins and be like, look, I'm such a fighting champion, even though he's a piece of shit, right? Because Kevin Owens is an awful human. So I like the continuity of the United States Open Challenge and AJ Styles being an actual fighting champion and saying, no, I want to issue an actual open challenge. Because we know that AJ Styles was upset with Kevin Owens for not having like an open, like a proper open challenge. So AJ Styles went to bat for Chad Gable to get that match against Kevin Owens at one time. So there's a lot of continuity and story here. And I like the idea that AJ Styles could have kick-ass matches with the likes of Chad Gable. I want to see AJ Styles versus Jason Jordan. I want to see AJ Styles versus a lot of people on the roster because I think that could be really, really cool. So I love that concept. I did not expect John Cena to answer the open challenge, even though in hindsight, looking back at the promo, it makes sense, right? Because he is talking about, you know, the man who initiated the open challenge. And of course, it would make sense for John Cena to come out and be like, hey, so this was my whole deal. I want that back. I'm John Cena. Here I am. I'm going to answer your open challenge. I loved this. I was like, are we actually going to get AJ Styles versus John Cena on SmackDown? I thought for a minute we were actually going to get the match. And I was so excited because those two are excellent together, right? And so I was stoked. So then when Kevin Owens came out to interrupt, I was just like, oh, boo, you dastardly human being, you piece of shit, Kevin Owens. But John Cena answering the open challenge was interesting because he said, what did he do? He came out and was like, that means for anybody but me, right? Because I'm fucking John Cena. So, you know, like, you're not going to want to have an open challenge and let me answer because have you met me? I'm John Cena was the implication. And I like AJ Styles kind of stepping to him and being like, no, especially you. because it shows that AJ wants to defend against the best and he wants to defend against a man. I mean, to be fair, AJ Styles knows that he can beat John Cena because he has beaten John Cena and beaten up John Cena many times in the past. But it's an interesting evolution of their relationship now that AJ is a babyface and Cena's still Cena. And it looks like they have a mutual respect for one another. And so I don't know. I was all in for all of this opening segment. I loved it.
Yeah, I really loved the bait and switch. I thought it was a really cool idea. I don't think you should give John Cena AJ Styles away again on SmackDown for free with no build. So I thought this was great. And I loved the idea they got so close to the match starting and Kevin Owens' music starts. Such a dick thing to do.
It made me boo Kevin Owens in all the proper ways, right? Because I'm like, you are the worst human, Kevin Owens. I wanted to see this match so badly and you suck for not letting me.
Exactly. I do just want to say, by the way, that if you were listening to the show a couple of years ago when I was in Vancouver before, I'm in a basement apartment of my friend's house, so if noise happens outside here, I cannot help it. But I'm hoping there was a little bit of a person taking a wheelie bin out there that I managed to mute. But if I'm midway through a sentence, I'm probably not going to be able to mute it, so I'm just warning you now, folks. Don't tweet me about it. There's nothing I can do.
The joys of independent podcasting.
Exactly. We're not in a podcast one studio, sadly. But then the thing is, if we did that, we'd have to be like, oh, Sondra, that's so funny. Do you know what I like to laugh? I like to make sure I use Andrex toilet paper. Because that, and then go into some sort of mad plug. Which we
Kenny, eat at Burger King. It's the best. Do they still advertise Burger King on Podcast One? It's been a long time since I've listened to a Podcast One show.
Same. But Kevin Owens comes out, talks about how he's the rightful owner of the championship, he wants it back. He questions why John Cena's back. Nobody wants to see a John Cena AJ Styles match again. I laughed at that too.
I love that the crowd was like, boo you Kevin Owens, we do want to see this match indeed.
Yeah. John Cena called him the Michelin Man. Ugh. And dared him to do something about it. And then Rusev blindsides John Cena from behind. AJ Styles makes the save, but then Kevin Owens hits a powerbomb on AJ, and then Rusev takes Cena down and puts the accolade in. Cena and AJ are left laying as Kevin Owens and Rusev stand tall. Just a great opening segment, really.
Apart from
the Michelin Man line, which, ugh. But apart from that,
and like great monkey's
segment.
Butt and that kind of thing. Although I did sort of laugh at monkey's butt, just the way AJ delivers it, because I'm just like, what are you even saying? What are the words coming out of your mouth? But no, I mean, Alexander Rusev coming out and putting the accolade on John Cena just brought me back to their feud before, right? Like, remember when Rusev had a tank? And remember when Rusev put John Cena in the accolade and John Cena passed out because the accolade was too much for John Cena because Rusev's such a badass? It brought me back to that, and I was like, yes, these are memories I definitely want to have.
Well,
so
they also
that made
they need,
me happy.
They need to bring Rusev back to a bit of legitimacy if we're gonna have any chance of believing that he has a chance of beating John Cena at the pay-per-view. So right. Yeah, they needed to do something. I thought it was good. Yeah,
did
I still
you see
don't
on Twitter when Rusev put remember when I had a tank and John Cena had this and it was just a car covered in American flags?
He's so good. I love him so much. Oh, he's the best. So yeah, good opening segment, sets up the main event of Cena and Styles against Rusev and Kevin Owens. The Singh brothers then come out on stage and they introduce the WWE champion, Jinder Mahal.
What's his name, Kenny?
Jinder fucking Mahal.
Mm-hmm.
Which if you, tomorrow, Dave and I recorded a really fun Patreon podcast today. On the network collection of the greatest matches ever, which I would put up tomorrow because after this I'm passing out. But when you do listen to that, do look out for the moment where David McCutcheon talks about how Randy Orton basically pissed on his father's grave by ruining Daniel Bryan's cash-in at the 2013 SummerSlam. But we both agreed that if Jinder Mahal gets beat by Randy Orton, then all is forgiven. And we will
happily wave that flag. No.
Wave the Randy Orton flag. Just get the belt off this jobber.
I don't know if I can handle the words coming out of your mouth right now. No. Uh-uh. Boo. Boo, Randy Orton.
Speaking of boos, Jinder Mahal comes out, and he has a match with Ty Dillinger, which is great. Great to see Ty getting some SmackDown time after the Battle Royal of last week. You know, continuing that. That's nice. Yeah, but the match is fine. It's nothing to write home about. I have something to say about the post-match,
I mean, the match itself, like you say, it was fine. It was just a match. Did Jinder cut the promo before or after the match?
after.
Okay.
Oh, it's after.
Yeah. So I mean, the match, it's basically, I like seeing Ty Dillinger. I like that Ty Dillinger got a match with the WWE champion, but this certainly didn't feel like the WWE champion in a match. Like,
see, the idea with this, I'm imagining, was like in 2000, Triple H, when he was the WWF champion, would have matches with mid-card guys, and it would elevate the mid-card guy. I feel like Ty Dillinger is more, feels like more of a guy than Jinder Mahal, and Jinder Mahal is the WWE champion.
Oh. And I mean, as much as I rail against Randy Orton, and as much as I am Team Maharaja for the Punjabi prison match, so just to get that out of the way, like, that's absolutely still true. Jinder Mahal is fucking boring, and Jinder Mahal's
boring,
not very good. And the thing is, I liked the presentation of Jinder Mahal at first, but I'm very, very tired, and we'll get into it with this promo that he cuts, because you know what it is, Kenny? It's the exact same promo as he's been cutting for weeks on end, and he doesn't say anything new, and
He's had all the chances in the world to do something different. But do you know there's 1.3 billion people in India? Do you know why I know that? Because I've heard that for the last 9 weeks in every single promo.
Seriously, it's so frustrating. And like, the thing is, I feel like a character like Jinder Mahal, and I feel like the presentation of Jinder Mahal could be a very interesting character. I feel like him cutting the same promo and saying like, "You people boo diversity. You people boo tolerance. I am Indian, 1.3 billion people, and
no,
now
we boo you 'cause you're straight.
Speak to my people in my language." Of
I love that he.
It's always the same cadence. It's so frustrating.
I love that he makes out like, just if you're Indian, you must support him. Like, I'll give you an example. In 2006, there was a brother act on the X Factor in the UK called the McDonald Brothers. They were fucking shite, right? I didn't support them just because they were Scottish.
Right.
That's not how it works.
Yeah, no, it's not how it works. And it's, if he were any, like, if he were changing the promo even a little, if any story advancement happened, I would be ready to enjoy it, right? Because I wanted Jinder to prove everyone wrong. I wanted Jinder to be good and compelling because I thought the presentation of him as an undeserving champion would be very interesting, but that's not the presentation they're going with. They're not presenting him anymore even like the guy who kind of snuck away with the belt because the Singh brothers helped him, which is still the story. The Singh brothers have absolutely helped him retain against Randy Orton and helped him beat Randy Orton in the first place. So that's still the story, but they're not really capitalizing on that. I think there's an interesting story to be told and they're not telling it at all. I got really bored and tuned out when he was speaking because I've heard the promo before. The crowd is booing and I wish the crowd would actually not respond to this because I get that.
I love that now it's like on Raw, I've got David going, "Guys, don't respond to Roman. You're just part of the problem."
Yeah, but Roman's actually like good. That's the difference.
As a wrestler, yes.
The Roman Reigns problem is just still a problem. He's an inevitability, but he's at least compelling. Like,
he is compelling, but you always make the point, and it's your best point, one of your best points. He stops storytelling.
Stop storytelling, and that's the problem with
but
Roman
Reigns.
But
you know what? The thing with Jinder? Jinder Mahal is the problem with SmackDown. Because
Mahal is stopping storytelling in his own right now, and that's, I think, my biggest issue with it. And as much as I'm trying to be the Jinder apologist every once in a while and be like, oh, it could be good, it could be good. It got to the point this week where I was like, it is not good, and it's not getting better. And I'm hoping that once Randy Orton is out of the way, maybe we can start to tell a new story. Maybe something interesting could happen. I don't have that much hope for it, but I'm kind of hoping that once they separate, once the Jinder Mahal Randy Orton story is over, we can start to tell an actual story that's not just, "Hey, I'm brown, boo me."
The thing is, right, I put a tweet out the day of Great Balls of Fire because I was very excited about Brock Lesnar and Samoa Joe. And I said, you know, they're fighting over the top title in WWE. And somebody was like, "Hey, the top title is the WWE title." No, it's not, because Jinder holds it. So right now it's not. It's not even, and as David said, it's not even the top title on SmackDown. It's
no,
like
the United
third.
States Championship and the Women's Championship. Yeah. I would say those two are about even keel.
You could even argue the tag. You could even make that argument. It's the least fucking important title. He is such a problem. And I'm sorry. I think he hurts SmackDown to a point where if people argue that Raw is a better show in terms of the main event scene, I would not argue one bit.
In terms of the main event scene, Raw is better. I mean, even though the champion's not around, but at least it feels important.
So at least it builds to this monster, you know, main event guy or whatever. But it's just SmackDown used to have this thing where it was, you know, the land of opportunity. Now they've raped that fucking phrase to the point where it just means, oh, anybody can win a title. But not in the good way. Not like someone who comes in and ascends. It's just, oh, we want to try and hit the India market. The only thing that's making me happy is that I feel through the storytelling they're starting to get bored of gender. Good. I'm bored. Get that fucking belt off of him.
But not to Randy Orton. Not to Randy Orton at all.
I don't care who it is now.
No. Not Randy Orton.
Jey Uso. I don't care. Just get it off this jobber fuck who is not any good. How long has he had now? How many weeks of this? Is it 12? Or 403? One of the two. And he's bad. He's not a good wrestler. He's not a good promo. It's just bad.
He's fine and he's there and the presentation around him is starting to get stale and the presentation around him was the thing that interested me. It's time for a new story or it's time for something new to happen. I don't think that Jinder's a completely
performer.
No, he's not a main event performer, and it's really coming across that he's not a main event performer.
And the thing
the crowd was behind Ty Dillinger in this match, and not because Jinder was such an effective heel. It's because people love Ty Dillinger.
That's the point, right? Because, like I was saying earlier, the story is that Jinder as champion is supposed to elevate Ty. It felt like Ty was elevating Jinder.
Yeah.
And when you have guys on the roster like Kevin Owens and AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura and John Cena, And this guy is the champion, like, they're all going to ascend to face Jinder fucking Mahal.
And I wish that they would tell the story that Jinder doesn't deserve to be WWE champion and that anybody could win it from him. Because I feel like there's intrigue in a Sami Zayn Jinder Mahal match, whereas, like, if Sami Zayn is fighting John Cena, we don't believe that Sami Zayn is going to beat John Cena for a world title, right? But we believe that Sami Zayn could beat Jinder Mahal for a world title. And that could be an interesting story. These are the types of things I want them to do with Jinder so that we don't have the same conversation every single week. But the problem is that Jinder's having the same conversation with himself every single week and not giving us much to go on.
Yeah. And I'm so done with it. Like,
you've been done with it since before it happened, to be fair.
I'm at a point, right, where, like, all cards on the table. I didn't watch SmackDown for 3 days after it aired. Two, 3 days. Because I just couldn't be bothered. Because I don't enjoy SmackDown as much anymore. Because of him.
See, that's where you and I are different, because, like, he doesn't bother me to the point where I don't enjoy SmackDown. Other things on SmackDown this week bothered me to the point where I didn't enjoy SmackDown, because it was a good episode, but...
I like wrestling in whatever format I'm watching, whatever show I'm watching, I like to see a very clear ascension of what's happening. You fight to a level to get a title shot within whatever division you're in or whatever... But I just find this so unbelievable that I can't comprehend it.
It is unbelievable, and they're not making that part of the story.
And even that story that you're telling, that's fine for like a month, but like,
it's
come on.
Too long,
like, let's just get the fucking belt off of him. You put him in a US title feud, it makes more sense. Then have him bang on about India.
This would make a lot more sense for the US title. It really feels like, I mean, everything's kind of out of balance. I mean, where you and I differ is if the main event scene is terrible on a show, it doesn't bother me that much just because I'm like, okay, fine, I can just ignore that and I'll enjoy the other stories. Like, I'm enjoying the US title scene
Don't you think that, like, and I'm not saying that I'm not saying my approach is right or your approach is right, but don't you think that by kind of being like, okay, well, I'll ignore it, like,
is a problem. They shouldn't be putting things on the show that I'm like, ignore this because it's terrible.
But having the main event and having the main title of that brand being such a joke or a problematic thing actually will hurt other aspects of the show, because it means that you can't really tell the story of the WWE Championship well. It's the WWE Championship. I mean, look at how many... So the WWE title, when he won the title, it was the main event. Right?
Mm-hmm.
A Backlash. And it's been the mid-card belt ever since.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's the mid-card WWE title. The thing is, there's nothing I hate worse than a mid-card world champion. It's just the bane of my existence. I'm like, you're either good enough to main event or you're not. Like, it's one of the two. It's like, it's almost like letting somebody beat you in a race.
Yeah. I mean, it's problematic for sure. And as much as I'm able to just be like, okay, whatever, this belt isn't that important, stories are going to be a lot more compelling if the main title on the show that people are fighting for is a compelling story, right? Like, if it's a compelling thing that people actually want. I don't know why everyone isn't going after Jinder Mahal for the title right now. I mean, another issue I
easiest
have
easiest time ever.
Right?
Easiest time to get the belt,
shouldn't
right?
everyone be like, clamoring to get matches with Jinder fucking
you
Mahal?
Could beat him, Sondra. I've seen Sondra lock up with people. Sondra could beat him. It's not hard. My lord.
I mean, it's frustrating for sure, and I wish that the WWE
for our listeners listening to us talk about it all the time. I'm sorry.
Well, I know, and that's part of the problem is that they're not giving us anything new to talk about, though. So we just kind of keep going in circles and circles and circles, but. Just my greatest wish is for something else to happen, some sort of progression so that it's not just the same promo, it's not just the same thing. We'll talk more about lack of progression on SmackDown when we get to another segment, which I think is soon. But this
far away.
This episode was incredibly frustrating from the lack of story progression perspective.
Yeah, hopefully... I think the thing is, like, now it's like the WWE titles become the joke. You know, it's like, ha ha, there's a Punjabi prison. Because that's what we're clinging on to now. At least there's something funny.
Yeah, because we know that Randy Orton versus Jinder Mahal is a shit story.
And
so
I will
at least
say,
there's a Punjabi prison, but...
What annoys me is that I just wish that Randy Orton had shown the fire that he's showing now at WrestleMania with Bray Wyatt. That's what I
yeah, that would have been nice. Maybe he could have actually, I don't know, put in some effort in that feud and made the match not suck completely. And maybe, you know, the whole House of Horrors situation, like the House of Horrors itself, I loved. But the match after the House of Horrors was...
You mean the regular match after he killed him?
The regular match after he killed him with a refrigerator. Like, I don't understand how that was allowed to happen. And that's the thing is, like, I don't want Randy Orton to be the champion again because I don't believe that Randy Orton is going to be motivated as champion. Because when Randy Orton has the title, he's just like, yeah, dude, I'm Randy Orton and I'm the champion and no one cares and everyone falls asleep. And I don't think it would be a better situation for Randy Orton to be champion. I think the better situation is for Randy Orton to lose at the Punjabi prison and then for Jinder Mahal to be beaten at SummerSlam swiftly and efficiently by
please, just
someone.
Anybody.
Anyone
fucking,
is
have
fine.
Have the ghost of Chris Benoit come back and beat him. Anybody. Just anyone beat this fucking atrocity. My God. Anyway. We go from that to the New Day. And the thing is what was so frustrating is see if Jinder Mahal had come in and been in the US title picture, I'd really be buying it right now. I'd be like, yeah, this is a good mid-card thing to do. I'm into this. Anyway, so we get the New Day coming out. They pour some cereal on people. As always, the Usos come out, talk about the rap battle from last week. And Xavier Woods has a short match with Jey Uso. And Xavier Woods gets the victory, just kind of keeping the feud going. When you know all the other guys got sent to the back midway through the match, and Xavier Woods got the win, just kind of keeping it going. They're gonna have the tag team title match at Backlash. I'm really digging this tag title feud. I think that both teams have kind of brought it, especially with the rap battle and the match at Money in the Bank. So yeah, it was cool by me.
Yeah, no, it was fine. I don't have much to say about it. It was kind of your standard fare, right? Whenever tag teams are going to face each other at a pay-per-view, you go, okay, well, let's have guys face each other in singles action to lead up to that, which is fine. I mean, would I rather see the Usos having a match against someone else? Yes. Would I rather see the New Day having matches against someone else? Yes. But there aren't that many teams, and I don't really want to see too many Ascension matches. So,
I don't
want to
see
fine.
Any.
I want to see the Ascension in more backstage skits with the Fashion Police is what I want to see the Ascension do.
Of course. Ladies and gentlemen, the following segment of SmackDown Live is going to make Sondra very angry. Please be aware of this when you listen to this podcast.
Raging.
So up next, Naomi's backstage talking to Shane. She's talking about how Carmella can come after her any time, but who's she going to defend her title against next? and then the rest of the women's division show up. Like, they just all show up at the same time. And they're all wanting title shots. And then
apparently Shane called everyone there except Carmella.
Yes, because she has the money in the bank briefcase, which I actually thought made good sense. Here's something I don't like, right? If you have a money in the bank briefcase, then you have a title shot at any time that you want to. So I've always thought it's a bit problematic of like, well, why would you give someone a title shot who's got the briefcase? The briefcase is their title shot. So unless they've done something else to earn a title shot, I don't know why they would get one. So I like the logic of that. But Shane then decides to book a 5-way elimination match for Battleground with the winner facing Naomi at SummerSlam. And the match will be between Natalia, Becky Lynch, Charlotte, Tamina, and Lana. Lana.
Because she deserves to get another opportunity.
Lana. So that's going to happen. And then tonight, Becky and Charlotte are going to take on Natalia and Tamina.
Just because.
Well, because they're all in the match, and Lana's shite.
Well, so's Lana.
But she's shite. It's not even that she's Tamina shite. Like, Tamina's shite, but can last 5 minutes. Lana's shite, but can't do anything. Or last 5 minutes.
I don't know. Lana at least hasn't been doing this for a decade, and is that terrible?
That's true. That's the one thing that she can argue. But then Carmella walks up with a note from her lawyer demanding James Ellsworth's reinstatement. I popped. And then Shane looked it over and tore it up and said the decision stands, which was quite funny. But go ahead, Sandra, take the floor. I know you have some stuff to say on this segment, setting up of the title match, the elimination match at Battleground, and so on and so forth.
So remember Extreme Rules, Kenny? Do you remember Extreme, or was it Elimination Chamber or Extreme Rules?
Elimination Chamber. The three singles women's matches.
Yeah, three singles. Let
me try and remember them. Don't tell me it was. It was Mickey James and Becky Lynch.
Mm-hmm.
Naomi and Naomi and Alexa Bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And Nikki Bella and Carmella.
Natalia. It was Natalia, and was it Naomi Alexa Bliss at that one?
We're such good podcasters.
No, I can't remember. But there were three individual women's matches, each with their own story, each with their own feud, each with their own motivations. All of the women felt like fully fleshed out characters. I knew exactly why everyone was fighting, even if I can't remember what all the matches are right now.
Becky Lynch, Mickey James, Nikki Bella, Natalia, and Naomi and Alexa Bliss.
So, I mean, Naomi and Alexa Bliss were fighting over the title, which made sense, right? Because it's a title story. Mickey James and Becky Lynch were fighting over the whole La Luchadora situation because Mickey James had cost Becky Lynch the title and, you know, helped Alexa Bliss win. It was very dastardly and all that kind of stuff. And Nikki Bella and Natalia were fighting because Natalia had attacked Nikki Bella before Survivor Series, taking her out of the match so that, you know, Natalia was in the match instead. And it had been, you know, the who attacked Nikki Bella story went on for ages and ages and ages. And I felt like I knew who these women were. I felt like I knew why they were fighting. I felt like there were multiple things happening in the women's division because it was an actual fully formed division, right? Like an actual fully formed world where characters interact and tell stories and the story is kind of intertwined, and they actually were very seamless leading from one story to another because Carmella and Nikki Bella had been feuding up until then, but then Carmella revealed that Natalia had attacked Nikki Bella, and it transitioned seamlessly, and it was this beautiful thing and it was this beautiful world, and I was so excited because we finally had good storytelling on SmackDown. And then WrestleMania season hit. And of course, what do you do at WrestleMania? You need to put all the women in one match to get everyone on the card. So, all right, well, they'll have a 5-minute women's match at WrestleMania. Fine. I was willing to accept it. I wasn't happy about it. I don't know if you remember, Kenny, but here on the SmackDown summary, I was kind of annoyed because leading up to that WrestleMania match, we just had nothing feuds and nothing stories because there was no progression in the division. No one was really able to show character. No one was really able to say, you know, why they were fighting. It's just, you know, they wanted the title. And that's it. And that's fine. That's a fine story to tell. But when all of your women are just lumped into the same story, it gets very frustrating because no one can really progress and grow and change. But whatever. That's WrestleMania season. We're kind of used to it because You know, there are so many matches on WrestleMania. You need to, you know, get everyone on the card. And it's not like we could make multiple women's matches. I mean, it's just, it is what it is, right? That's the whole virtue of WrestleMania. Fine.
I actually think the model of WrestleMania is broken.
Of WrestleMania is broken, and it's a problem. But it is what it is right now, and so we just kind of had to move on, and I was very
WrestleMania
excited.
Festival, that's what needs to happen.
It really is what needs to happen. But I was like, okay, we just need to get past WrestleMania, and then we'll have another story. And I'm still waiting for that. WrestleMania's been over since April. And then, you know, we were leading into what came after WrestleMania. I'm very bad at this. Backlash, right? So, okay, fine. Like, yeah, we have Naomi and Charlotte at Backlash. Is that what I saw? Or no. No, Naomi has never actually defended it on pay-per-view, has she? What happened at
Backlash? I am trying to find this information. I knew that's what you were going to ask me. And I'm trying to not make too much noise here.
It was a tag at Backlash. I was there. What am I even saying? It was a tag match at Backlash, I believe.
Yeah, it was the welcoming committee against Charlotte, Naomi, and Becky Lynch in the six women's
tag.
That's right,
the welcoming committee storyline. And do you see how I just rattled off, like, the feuds leading into Elimination Chamber? I was like, this is exactly why they're happening, and blah, 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 blah. And after that, I'm just kind of stuck because I'm like, and then what happened? I don't really remember.
But then you get to Money in the Bank and you
but
have...
But you get to Money in the Bank. And again, we're in this situation where I'm like, okay, by virtue of Money in the Bank, by virtue of wanting a Money in the Bank ladder match with the women, because I think that's a really fucking cool thing, right? Like, it's the first women's Money in the Bank ladder match. It's very cool. I really am still desperately wanting individual storylines and individual feuds and one-on-one singles matches on pay-per-view. But... it's also really cool to have a Money in the Bank ladder match. And we did get a singles match on that pay-per-view.
Oh, come on.
It was terrible because it was Naomi versus Lana. Naomi has not had a legitimate contender on pay-per-view since winning the title. And that's frustrating. But, you know, whatever. Like, I was excited about the Money in the Bank ladder match. I was like, okay, we just need to get past Money in the Bank. And then we can start individual storylines. And we can start revving up the SmackDown Women's Division again, right? Because we have Charlotte here. And we have Becky Lynch. And we have Natalia, who are all really good wrestlers. Carmella's a fantastic character. And then there's Tamina and Lana and whatever. But I was so looking forward to after Money in the Bank finally getting back to women's feuds and women's storylines and actual things happening. And then we have this fucking segment where Shane McMahon calls all the women together and it's like, you know what? On the next pay-per-view, we're going to do this thing that we could absolutely just do here tonight. We could absolutely have, you know, a five-way or a battle royal or something like that could happen on any episode of SmackDown. And it has happened on any episode of SmackDown. We've seen plenty of number one contender matches on SmackDown Live. But for some reason, we just want to be lazy and not put in any effort whatsoever. This is the laziest booking in the world. They're not even trying to, like, build a contender for the next pay-per-view. They're like, no, the next pay-per-view, we're just going to have everyone in one match again. And it's so frustrating because SmackDown was the place where women's feuds and things grew and changed and people actually got fully formed. Like on Raw, we saw the same like 3-4 women just constantly, and the rest of the division was gone. So I understand that SmackDown is trying to get all of the women on the show every week and it's trying to feature the whole division, but you need to actually have quality for the division to do. You can't just throw everyone out there and be like, look, they're on screen, if they're just flat one-dimensional characters, which is what everyone feels like right now.
I do have some thoughts. First of all, I think that part of the problem with, I think if the Battleground thing had happened with none of the previous things that you'd mentioned, it'd have been fine. There'd be no problem. It's the fact that there's been like 3 or 4 months of this before, mm-hmm. that makes it very problematic. I think that, like, what I really would like to see next year at WrestleMania season, to just address that first, is I don't think that everybody needs to be in the card, personally.
I don't either. I mean, I, like, agree with you on that, but that's how they think.
But I think you should just find the best story. And I know it's hard, because, like, you know, if you have, like, I mean, it'd be mad to have a WrestleMania card where you don't have Charlotte and Becky on it, or have, you know, Nikki Bella on it, or Carmella. Like, I know that it's hard, but I just think that the multi-people matches very rarely are memorable. Like, this five-way elimination match is not going to be something we talk about in a couple of years.
No,
it's just
not.
What I do like about it, the plus point, is I do like that we're... See, the other issue is the Lana thing has hurt Naomi because it's been a joke that she's had to face her 3 or 4 times. But I do like the idea that, like, you know, to get a shot at Naomi at SummerSlam, you have to work for it, and it's going to be a thing. But like I said, yeah, I think it's just the few months of this has been problematic. And especially because before WrestleMania, there was so much women's storylines on SmackDown. I can't argue with your frustration. Like, I get it. I hope that at SummerSlam, I want to see a one-on-one women's match. And I think it needs to either be Becky or Charlotte, to be honest. I think it needs to be Charlotte, actually.
I think Charlotte makes the most sense. I mean, I would love to see it be Becky, but I think Charlotte and Naomi still feel like they have some unfinished business.
Well, also, you want to see a women's title match on SmackDown at a pay-per-view that really, like, nails it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best chance you have of doing that.
So. Especially after months of this bullshit. Like, I was actually really looking forward to after Money in the Bank. I thought they were setting up Becky Lynch versus Carmella as a secondary feud. I thought we were going with, you know, Naomi, Charlotte, Becky Lynch, Carmella. And then who knows what Tamina and Lana and Natalya are doing. But, like, it seems like it's there, right? Like, the building blocks are there for individual compelling stories. They just are refusing to tell them. And that's the frustrating part, is that they don't have any excuses anymore. Like, we're not leading to Money in the Bank where it has to be a multi-woman match. We're not leading to WrestleMania where you feel like you have to shove everyone on the card. We're leading to Battleground where you could absolutely have multiple women's matches. I mean, what else is on that card that needs to just shove all the women in one match? You could absolutely have multiple matches. And I mean, SmackDown's been capable of it before and willing to do it before. And I just, like, my plea to them is to do that again, because that was actually compelling. I didn't hear anyone talking at Elimination Chamber like, oh, there were three women's matches and no one wants to see the women wrestle. No, people were actually stoked about some of those matches because they were compelling and had reasons to exist.
Yep. I can't argue with you. I think you're right. But hopefully...
And I feel like this actually hurts the TV leading into it, because instead of building compelling stories and having, you know, interactions between, say, like Becky and Carmella or whatever, which I still think will be the next feud once Ellsworth comes back. But instead of that, we get these meaningless tag matches or just these meaningless matches.
At least there's only one more week of it. And
which
then we've
is good.
Got, and then we've got the pay-per-view. But I think in the pay-per-view, we need a victor. And we need to see a title match at SummerSlam that matters. So that's if that comes out of it, then okay.
Well, my fear is, though, that leading into SummerSlam, it's another one of those stacked cards where there are going to be too many matches on the card to build multiple feuds to the pay-per-view. We'll build the title feud, but then what happens with the rest of the women? Are they just going to all be in another tag?
I feel like you'll see Becky and Carmella in a match, and you'll see Naomi and, I assume, Charlotte, and that'll be it. Which is fine, you know, two women's matches is fine.
I'm hoping we get the two, but then there's also going to be a Raw women's match and whatnot. I mean, that card fills up really quickly, so...
I think Carmella probably goes on the kickoff, but that's fine. Like, SummerSlam's one of those shows that I kind of like, I know they want to make this year SummerSlam feel huge, so it probably will be one of those kind of four-hour pay-per-views, two-hour kickoff things, mm-hmm. which is fine. Like, put Becky and Carmella on the second hour of the kickoff, put Naomi and Charlotte on the pay-per-view. I think it's realistic that could happen. I don't really think Tamina and Lana need to be anywhere near SummerSlam.
No, I really hope that they're not. I mean,
but there was SummerSlam
seems
access.
To be a story that they're telling is the whole Tamina Lana situation. But I just
we'll get to it. So yeah. We move from there, and Baron Corbin's interviewed backstage, and basically it's about Nakamura. Renee told him that Nakamura wasn't afraid of him. And he talked about how, you know, he was afraid of what he would do to him. So that takes to Shinsuke Nakamura making his entrance. Great response, as always. Baron Corbin follows. But before the match can even begin, Nakamura goes straight after Baron Corbin on the ramp. They brawl in the crowd, then brawl through the crowd, come back to ringside. Agents have to break them up. And Nakamura got in the ring, kind of taunted Corbin, like, come on. And then Baron Corbin holds up his briefcase and leaves. I thought this was a pretty good brawl, pretty enjoyable. I'm still a little bit skeptical of what the match quality is going to be like. But do you know what? Big Baza Corbs has had some decent main events, so maybe it's going to happen on the Battleground now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a fine brawl. It wasn't bad or anything. It was kind of a standard fare brawl, but I think Shinsuke Nakamura did look like he had some fire to him. Like, when he got back in the ring, was like, come on, you know, and, like, goading Baron Corbin into coming after him again. I liked that. I thought it was, like, fairly compelling. I don't know how I feel about the match exactly. It's not my first choice. I'm hoping it's one and done, and that Shinsuke Nakamura not fighting Baron Corbin again at SummerSlam, because want Shinsuke to have a good opponent at SummerSlam, right? And I mean, you and I agree on that. So I'm fine with this. I do keep forgetting that Baron Corbin is Mr. Money in the Bank. And I
forgot until he picked up at the end.
Yeah, like, and I think that Baron Corbin being Mr. Money in the Bank was the right decision in terms of elevating Baron Corbin, and it makes sense, right? Because he's a smarmy dickhead. Like, he's kind of one of the perfect people to hold the briefcase so that he can just lord it over people. But I think what's actually hurting Baron Corbin being Mr. Money in the Bank is exactly what we were saying about the Jinder Mahal situation, is that the WWE title doesn't feel like the most prestigious title to go after. It almost feels like he should be Mr. Money in the Bank going for the US championship at this point, because he doesn't seem that elevated by having a briefcase that contains a contract for a title that no one seems to want.
Yeah, and I echo your sentiments. I hope that Shinsuke Nakamura has big title match at SummerSlam. I keep forgetting Baron Corbin's Money in the Bank, Mr. Money in the Bank. But, I don't think it's possible for them to have a good match, but I'm not holding my hopes that there's going to be a classic.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of wish that Shinsuke had something more to work with, given that, like, he just kind of got a lot more interesting after Money in the Bank and his, you know, excellent performance in that match. But I don't think it'll be terrible or anything. And I think it'll probably be more compelling than the Dolph Ziggler feud, because Baron Corbin is not Dolph Ziggler. So that definitely works in his favor. I guess I feel like if somebody else had Money in the Bank who was more compelling than Baron Corbin, that might help elevate the title scene as well. And I think it's just kind of an unfortunate, like, Baron can't really be elevated by the briefcase, but he's also not interesting enough to elevate the briefcase in the title scene right now. So I think we're just kind of stuck.
We go from there to John Cena and AJ Styles backstage. They have a kind of chat about the main event tag match. AJ tells Cena that he took something from last time they were in the ring together and he hadn't forgotten about it. And holding the US title means he's the best and he owed him one. And Cena said that that, like, you know, he respected AJ, wants to compete with the best, and he's big on respect because it's earned. And he told AJ he has his back
later.
It's
even on his shirt, so, you know.
He lives by it. Mm-hmm. They're pals for now, which I like the slight bit of tension between them. It's good. Tag match next, Charlotte and Becky against Tamina and Natalya. Lana, of course, comes down and gets involved. And in the end, Tamina and Natalya get the victory. Because Lana gets an apron and gets involved and blah, 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 blah. Tamina and Natalya are victorious, and we see Tamina, Natalya, and Lana all, like, you know, looking menacingly at the ring at Becky and Charlotte as Tamina's cannibal music plays. Ugh, that's just dull.
It was very dull and very frustrating. And you know what I wish, Kenny? This is not going to be popular.
What do you wish?
I wish this were Eva Marie instead of Lana.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. 100%.
Because 100%. I think Eva Marie was actually compelling doing this kind of thing. Part of the problem with Lana is that we're supposed to be telling the story that she can't do anything and that she's not ready for this, but she doesn't feel like she's embracing that side of things. If you follow Lana on social media and if you hear her talk about herself and whatnot, she doesn't come across as, like, she's not nearly smarmy enough. And she definitely is always like, no, I put in hard work and I'm ravishing and I'm amazing. But she doesn't have that inherent unlikability that Eva Marie had. And I feel like that actually helped Eva. Like, I really wanted to see the conclusion of the Eva Marie story, right? Like, before she got suspended, I kind of loved her evading matches and that kind of thing. And I think she was just a lot more compelling in that role as the, you know, the woman who's pretty and can't necessarily wrestle, but that was part of her story. But Lana seems to be under the impression that she can, and it doesn't necessarily feel like she's committed to any character in particular. Like, she, I don't know if she knows what she is. I think she thinks she's a super strong character who's amazing, but I struggle to tell you what Lana is. Is she like just a dancer? Is she still
I know what she is.
Rusev's wife.
I can tell you straight away.
Mm-hmm.
She's shite.
She's not very good. Shite. I wanted her to be compelling. I did. Like when she started.
How many people on SmackDown?
Even her entrance isn't that good, right? Like, she just smiles.
But why on SmackDown do we need to be lumbered with so many piles of shite?
I don't
Gender,
know.
Lana, Ascension.
At least the Ascension can be funny.
Yeah, they can be funny, but, like, I think the thing, like, that's, like, when you, if you watch Raw, for example, like, it's rare that you watch Raw and you go, oh, there's so many really shite people on it. And, like,
I mean, you are talking about a show with The Drifter and R-Truth on it.
I mean, at least he's kind of like in the background, you know? Lana's like the focal point of the women's division, or was for like a month. I just feel like SmackDown, we're lumbered with too many shite people. Just please get rid of Jinder Mahal.
Too many shite people in the title scene. Like, I think there's a place for Lana. I don't think that place is number one contender for the women's championship.
And then make her more interesting by teaming her with Big Tam? No thanks.
I mean, if they can get some sort of character secondary mid-card feud going, that would be amazing. But we seem incapable of mid-card feuds in the women's division because just put them all on the screen all at once.
What makes me happy, though, is Maria is banging on the male locker room door. Chad Gable answers, and she wants an apology from Sami Zayn. She wants to talk to him.
Don't you mean Sami Wow Wow?
Sami Wow Wow. Gable tries to get him, but he's not there. And Maria told Chad that if he saw Sami, to tell him that the First Lady of SmackDown is looking for him. And then we come back, and Maria and Mike are being very sickeningly sweet to each other, giggling and, you know, being in love. When Sami walks up and asks what they wanted, Maria wants an apology for interrupting them. He says he's apologized twice and he's getting a bit sick of it. And, like, you know, why are you actually there? Like, Mike, do you wrestle here? What are you doing? And then he was like, oh, I get it. You know, Mike's the lover, Maria's the fighter. And then Maria slaps him and Mike breaks a vase over his head and Sami is laid out on the floor. Yes! Mike and Maria are finally in a story properly. Mike smashed him over the head. I'm in. I like this. Yay.
I'm into it too. I like it as well. I don't love Sami Zayn being like, oh, you're the lover and she's the fighter. Because that's coming across as a little too much WWE babyface and not actual good guy Sami Zayn babyface. Well, so frustrating.
I got more from that like, Mike hasn't done anything. Like, Mike's just there. It's Maria
that's doing this.
And it's Maria that's doing all the action. And he's trying to get a rise out of Mike because Mike's not even paying attention to him. So I for me, that's how I took it. But I don't think it's out with the I don't think it's out with the realms of possibility that it could be your interpretation either.
Yeah. So I mean, and that's it's not like I had a huge problem with it, but it is frustrating. I don't like hearing Sami Zayn talk like a regular WWE dickhead babyface ever. Right? He should be Sami Zayn. He should be amazing. But I like the fact that the story is continuing, and I'm pretty into it. Like, Sami Zayn has a point, right? Like, what even are they doing here? They just talk about being in love. They're not wrestling. They're not.
And I did
want to
make this
anything.
Point earlier. Mike Kanellis is more believable as the WWE champion right now,
even though he hasn't done a thing.
And I'm not even joking. Like, think about that. I'm not even joking. I'm being deadly serious. I'd buy him a
champ. I believe you. Like, if Mike Kanellis got a title shot against Jinder Mahal and won, I think he would be a more compelling character at this point as WWE champion. One of the only people that I think would not be a more compelling character than Jinder Mahal as champion would be Randy Orton. And unfortunately, that's who he's facing in the pay-per-view. So therein lies the problem, right? I didn't expect it to escalate so quickly with the vase being broken on Sami Zayn. And I like on Talking Smack, actually, when, you know, Shane McMahon was a little bit of a dickhead to Sami Zayn. He's like, oh, yeah, but she got a good line in, right? On Sami Zayn. Because what did she say? Again, love hurts or something?
Yeah, she said, this was brought to you by the power of love. Just remember, love hurts. It was a good line.
It was a good line. But, I mean, for Shane McMahon to welcome Sami Zayn onto Talking Smack and then be like, that was a good line. I like that Sami Zayn was like, all right, well, I'm still a little hot about that situation. And that was kind of a dickhead thing to say to me. Like, he just, he seemed very annoyed with the situation and genuinely like, no, I'm sore. I got a vase broken over me. I don't appreciate them interrupting me. He's like, I know that they think I'm interrupting them, but I mean, I was stretching like athletes do and I knocked over a thing and, you know, I apologized. I said I'm into their message, but they, you know, if anything, they're interrupting me doing my job. If my music hits, I need to go wrestle a match because that's what I'm here to do, right? Like, I'm a wrestler and they're just sitting there banging on them about the power of love or whatever. Like, this isn't the Power of Love show. This is SmackDown Live. This is where we wrestle. This is what we're supposed to be doing. And I kind of like that. I mean, it's not like they're fighting over any huge important thing, but I definitely do want to see Sami Zayn kind of kick Mike Kanellis' ass because I'm on Sami's side. And I love dorky Sami Zayn too. I mean, obviously we've been through that, how much I identify with dorky Sami Zayn.
I think Mike and Maria needed to step up the aggression here. I think it was time.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So, and it made me more into it. It feels like, you know what's happening, Kenny?
Story.
Take a story, and one thing happened one week, and then the next week, a different thing happened. So it was like, the story was building and being told over time sequentially, like the way wrestling shows are supposed to fucking work.
Indeed. So I'm guessing Sami and Mike might have a match at Battleground, or maybe it's SummerSlam. Maybe we get story for a few more weeks first.
Could be both. You never know.
You never know. The announced teams throw over to the Walker Texas Ranger themed fashion files. Where we get, it's featuring Chuck Norris, not really featuring Chuck Norris.
But they show footage of Chuck Norris being on WWE TV. I used to watch Walker Texas Ranger with my dad, so this made me really happy.
They were dressed like cowboys and they were, they were running out of suspects and they were trying to, you know, figure out what they were going to do. Fandango is riding a stick horse and Tyler Breeze has a lasso and the plan is that they're going to find somebody and when Fandango gets the guy distracted, Tyler Breeze is going to come in, get the lasso around him, they're going to catch the guy.
Because they're saying that it's Tyler Breeze's lasso of truth as well.
Yes, exactly. So Fandango comes up to Zack Ryder, tells him he looks good, and Tyler Breeze then comes in to try and do the lasso, and he ends up lassoing himself. And then Mojo Rawley comes in, and they're trying to, you know, Fandango and Tyler Breeze are trying to figure out, where were you guys last week when our office got trashed? And Mojo, clearly playing the heel here, will say, you know, well, we were too worried about becoming number one contenders, not your office. Fandango called Mojo shady. And then Zack said, it was shady last week when you eliminated me from the Battle Royal. Mojo was like, it's every man for himself. I had to do what I had to do. You know, you need to get your head back on straight. We need to get back in the game. Mojo walks off. And Zack said, yeah, I probably need to get back down to reality, you know, like some other people. And walked off. And Fandango and Breeze then spotted that their horse had been stolen. And they don't know what to do. But next week, we get Ghost Aliens and X-Files themed fashion files.
I'm so excited. The truth is not H.
Exceptional. Exceptional. Like, this is my kind of wacky, so I'm into it. And I just hope they do have some suspect. I hope that they know who the tag team is going to be, and we have a tag team to actually, you know, like, a lot of build now. I just hope it's something decent.
I still hope it's American Alpha.
Yep, same.
I still really hope it's American Alpha. Just, I mean, this segment is just, don't be the Ascension. No, we've already interviewed the Ascension, and we know that the Ascension didn't trash the office, because when they were feeding the Ascension a cheese platter because Connor the Rat was there, the office got trashed and the Ascension was in the other room. We know it's not the Ascension unless they're working with somebody else. So I'm just saying, I mean, logically, I did spend a good deal of a couple of days ago watching through all the fashion files again, just to let you know, because of course I did, because they're so good. And yeah, I mean, I love Tyler Breeze lassoing himself with the lasso of truth and not being able to work it. But the thing is too, I think these fashion file segments are actually helping to progress other stories now, which is good, right? Like, they interacted with the New Day, when the New Day was going to face the Usos, they're interacting with the other teams on the roster, and it's actually making it feel like a fully formed world. It seems like we stopped telling women's stories, but we started telling tag stories. It's like they can't do both at once for some reason. Like, hey, guess what, SmackDown? You could just put in the effort and tell stories for both divisions, and that would be the coolest thing in the world. But no, I really like this, and I like using Tyler Breeze and Fandango to advance other characters as well. I think it's really smart. And the whole Hype Rose situation, it feels like Mojo's going heel.
God, I hope so.
I know that you said that Mojo was going to be the babyface and that Zack Ryder was going to be the heel and that it was inevitable, but I mean, all signs point to Mojo Rawley being the heel here, right?
Like, I'm going to give you one thing that proves that's the wrong.
What?
At the end, Zack Ryder was like, yeah, maybe I need to get back to reality. That sounded like one of those little nuggets they put in there. If he's going to, right, you want to be realistic, I'm going to turn on you.
Yeah, that's true. I really hope it doesn't go the standard Zack Ryder turns on Mojo Rawley way. And if that happens, I won't be shocked, but I will be disappointed, because I think they have the potential to tell a better story here with, you know, incremental turning. Because if they do that, if Zack Ryder turns on Mojo Rawley, it's kind of justified, and Mojo Rawley looks like kind of a dickhead right now. And then if Zack Ryder also looks like a dickhead, who do you cheer for? No one. And then neither guy gets over. And then what is the point of all of this?
I just think that Zack Ryder is a good babyface.
He is a good babyface. And I think that's the way I would like it to stay. I mean, maybe Zack Ryder does have to, you know, be a little more serious or something, which is weird because that kind of upsets the dynamic of the Hype Bro. Zack Ryder's always been the more serious Hype Bro, and Mojo Rawley's been the one bouncing off the walls on speed. But I mean, I'm a lot more compelled by Mojo Rawley now that he's, you know, kind of serious and trying to examine why he's been losing. Mojo Rawley's actually become kind of a compelling character, and I don't really know how to feel about that, but I'm willing to go with it.
I guess we'll see where it goes. We'll see where it's gonna take us. But it takes us into the main event of John Cena and AJ Styles against Rusev and Kevin Owens. They go about 15 minutes. It's a pretty good match. Good stuff. But in the end, Kevin Owens would end up getting a Pele kick and then Cena and AJ got the victory. They celebrated afterwards, tease a little bit of tension, but they hold their arms up and are chums. The main event was fine.
Yeah, it was a good match. It wasn't anything that I was jumping out of my chair for or anything, because it's a tag match leading to two different feuds, whatever. Like, it was good. I enjoyed it. I think the respect between John Cena and AJ Styles is interesting. I think it'll lead to an interesting dynamic when the two do face again, because I feel like that's happening. All signs kind of point, for me, it seems like they're setting up John Cena AJ at SummerSlam. Do you think that's the plan?
It feels that way, which says to me, who the hell is going after Jinder's title? Oh my god, if it's Nakamura. I mean, I don't think it is, but my god, if it is.
I mean, that would be ideal, because I really wanted to see Nakamura Cena somehow at SummerSlam, but if Nakamura goes after the title and potentially wins it, that'd be pretty freaking cool.
That'd be great.
I'd be a big fan of that.
My thumb for this show is down, because the reason it's down is because I feel like the presentation of SmackDown in the last few months has been very formulaic, mm-hmm. and it's been very similar, and I think that, credit where credit's due, I think Raw has been better as a show from what it was before. I think Raw's had improvements to it. It's still a three-hour show, which is really hard to get through, but I think they've done a lot to make people, and it's been more compelling in certain ways, and I think that SmackDown has regressed in certain ways. You know, we've got the constant tag team women's matches. There's characters like Jinder, who's the fucking world champion. There's, you know, Baron Corbin, who's not quite the wrestler he needs to be. I mean, he's fine. And it just feels like a lot of the show is just kind of there. And it's not really that exciting. There's some really good stuff that's like waiting in the wings, like the Sammy and Mike and Marie stuff is good. Fashion Files is really fun, and the AJ Cena tease is really good. But my other question is, you know, where the fuck was Randy Orton? He's supposed to be in a title match in 10 days.
He can't be bothered. He's Randy Orton.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, my thumb was down for this one. It wasn't that it was a terrible show. It's just, I just, I don't know. It's
kind of a slog, though. Like, and SmackDown's not usually a slog to get through. Even on weeks where not much happens, it's usually a pretty fun watch. And there was definitely fun stuff on this show. I really enjoyed the opening segment. I was into it. And, you know, the Sami Zayn, Mike and Maria stuff, I like. I'm not, you know, jumping out of my chair for it, but I like it. The Fashion Files really saved the show for me, because at that point I was like, why am I still watching this episode of SmackDown? Because I was so raging about the women's stuff. I'm like really, really angry about it, obviously. But my thumb is also down for the show, I think, just because, I mean, kind of the same stuff you're saying. It does feel formulaic. And after watching it, I was like, yeah, I could pick out individual things that I liked. But as a show, I don't think it really held together. And it seems like, I mean, when a television show is good, there's some sort of through line or, you know, like, I don't know, ongoing story throughout the episode. And this one just kind of felt like we're just putting stuff out there, and it's segment one to segment two, da 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 da. Nothing really felt connected. And it was kind of boring in places, in way too many places. Like, SmackDown doesn't really have an excuse. They have all the talent in the world on that show. It should not be this dull.
Agreed. But let's talk about, before we go, let's talk about the bad news. Talking Smack has been cancelled as a weekly TV show. It will remain after SmackDown pay-per-views, but as a weekly show, it's gone. What are your thoughts?
I don't understand this decision at all.
I've looked into it, and I'm
curious, is it because Daniel Bryan is unavailable so often?
No, the main reason seems to be that it was a very low viewed show on the network. It never cracked the top 10. It never really did that well.
You know what would help that is having Talking Smack on directly after SmackDown.
I was going to say that
205 Live.
I think that's part of the problem, is it's on after 205 Live, which sucks the soul out of everyone. I think the thing is, like, so there's obviously a story going around that Sports Illustrated put out about, you know, Vince McMahon hates Talking Smack, and or like, he's the one that cancelled it. And, like, I was listening to Brian Alvarez, and he made a really good point where he talked about, you know, the idea that Vince McMahon saw Talking Smack, that it was bad for the product, whatever. But, like, Vince McMahon has used angles from Talking Smack on SmackDown for months.
Yes.
And Vince McMahon is the guy behind SmackDown. Like, it's not like
Do people forget that? I mean, like, he's still the guy making all the decisions.
I think sometimes people think that he just, like, takes Tuesday off and then the kids get to play and make SmackDown. But, like, I just think it's one of those things of, like, maybe he didn't like the fact that there was, you know, Daniel Bryan was making fun of Raw on the show. I mean, I don't think he really cared, to be honest. But I think the fact that Daniel Bryan can't be there every week hurts it.
You know, because that's something I did want to say, is, like, I'm bummed about Talking Smack being canceled. I think it's a ridiculous decision, because I think it was so good for the performers and the characters to be able to have an unscripted environment to grow and change and, you know, kind of prove what they can do. Because the promos on Talking Smack often feel very different to the ones that you see on the actual television show. But I don't know that Talking Smack has been a very good show all the time lately, which is kind of frustrating, because even I used to just be so into Talking Smack. Like, I always wanted to watch it immediately after watching SmackDown, which I can do because I don't get to watch SmackDown live. So It's already available for me by the time I get to watch it. And lately it's been more like,
it's not been must see.
Talking Smack is something that I should, you know, probably watch. There haven't been moments like the Miz's excellent promo. There haven't been segments that you're just like, oh my gosh, like, I really need to see this. And I think part of that is Daniel Bryan not being part of it, because he's, you know, he's not always there at SmackDown. He has other responsibilities, you know, at home with his baby and everything. But
and maybe really it doesn't need to go in a high. Maybe it doesn't need to go in a high. Maybe it's better for it to kind of be a monthly thing, whatever. Like, at first when I heard it, I was so pissed. I was on Twitter and I was like, you know, it's a ridiculous decision. But at the end of the day, like, if it's not pulling in viewers, like, I can't really argue hugely, I guess. I mean, I think it had its merits.
I think Talking Smack has actually gotten more formulaic lately, too, and has felt more like, because they've even had segments on Talking Smack where, like, Dasha is backstage interviewing someone, like, it's just an extension of the show, which felt strange, because it used to feel like this, you know, this sort of dangerous, unscripted environment where anything could happen. I don't want to see like backstage pre-tapes on Talking Smack. I don't want to see tons of recap footage on Talking Smack. I want to hear them dish, right? I want to hear them actually like make fun of Raw and talk shit about each other. And
then we had bad weeks where like JBL or Booker T would be the co-host and you're like, oh no, get them away from this.
Yeah.
But like, I feel bad for Renee Young and Daniel Bryan who found out through Twitter. You know, that sucks
a lot.
But I liked that there were so many people like, you know, The Miz and Xavier Woods and other people who were tweeting out about it and talking about the merits of Talking Smack and how good it was. I mean, there's a reason that people don't really talk about Raw Talk as much.
Because it's shite.
I mean, the one after Great Balls of Fire was okay because it was, you know, it was Renee Young and Pete Rosenberg, but I just think that dynamic of Renee Young and Daniel Bryan was really the core of the show that made it what it was. And also, yeah, I think Talking Smack was another way to utilize him.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost think whenever Daniel Bryan's on the show, I tend to think that his main purpose is Talking Smack. So now I'm kind of like, oh, so he's going to fly into one segment every week. Every couple of weeks.
Yeah, it seemed to be where Brian got to show more of his personality as well, which I love because he's always so snarky because, you know, you can tell Daniel Bryan gives zero fucks and doesn't really want to be there, but also wants his contract to actually run out. So he has to be an active performer and do their dates and everything. But I mean, I like the dynamic because you never really knew what Bryan was going to say. Like, and that made it really fun. But I think what's going to hurt SmackDown even further is Talking Smack gives people like Baron Corbin a chance to grow and learn and get better at delivering promos, right? I mean, it helped Alexa Bliss a lot develop some more character. It helped, I mean, The Miz and Daniel Bryan confrontations were amazing, but I think even getting to see the Usos chat and be their actual selves on Talking Smack. I mean, the New Day has plenty of that opportunity in front of the camera on SmackDown as well, because the New Day's kind of given carte blanche to do what they want to do, right? But I think it's helped a lot of other people. I mean, Naomi comes across as so genuine on Talking Smack and just like a genuinely nice person that you want to hang out with. And I think even if it had low viewership, the viewers that were watching Talking Smack were probably more invested in the characters that were on the show because they watched it. And it gave the performers a chance to learn as well. So I think it was a really valuable tool that can't cost like anything to produce. So I don't know. I think it's unfortunate. And I kind of wonder, because they canceled Unfiltered as well, which was, you know, another Renee Young show on the network. So are they just phasing her out for some reason? Because that seems bonkers to me.
I've not heard anything about that. I mean, I know they really like her, so I mean,
and
at least
talk because she's so talented. Like, at least Talking Smack is going to be interviews now.
I guess so. I mean, at least Talking Smack is still going to be a monthly thing. You know, I don't know how that works in like SummerSlam. Like, do we get it on the Tuesday after SummerSlam? Or do we get it right after the paper? I don't know, really know what happens, but at least Talking Smack's going to be around once a month, and maybe that'll make it more compelling that it's, you know, you have to make the Talking Smacks count.
I guess, but that doesn't seem like the right approach, though, because Talking Smack actually helped elevate or helped progress stories week to week. Maybe that's the problem. They forgot how to tell stories, and so they're like, oh, what do we have this Talking Smack thing for? We used to use it to progress stories and characters, but we don't care about that anymore, so fuck it.
But you know, like, Raw Talk after Great Balls of Fire had really good segments with Cass and Miz. So, I don't know, maybe the pay-per-view one, the post-pay-per-view ones now are going to do some stuff.
Well, I'm sure that they can do some stuff. It's just, you can do that stuff every week. They just haven't been doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a shame. I really like Talking Smack. I'll miss it. But at least I'll get a little bit of a dose of it at some point, once every month or whatever.
I just hope it's Renee and Brian and not...
Oh, God.
Keep
Booker T away from everything.
Keep Booker T as far away from everything as possible, yes.
Yeah, just keep him away. Sandra, how can people find you on Twitter if they want to get in touch with you and speak to you or see your lovely face?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. And follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. If you want to hear bonus content, including the thing that Kenny and David recorded that he's going to put up tomorrow, including Great Balls of Fire review, including classic pay-per-view reviews, including all sorts of other stuff. We're going to be talking about Battleground after it happens. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Thank you to everyone who already subscribes to us over there. We've been getting lots of good feedback on stuff, and it's always great to hear from you people. It's kind of overwhelming when I look back and think, like, we have 460 some subscribers, like people who actually care enough about us to pay money to hear us talk more.
It is lovely. And also, great news, I just got access to a bunch of the old interviews that that we didn't have before, so they will now be able to be uploaded once a week. We have one of the last and great interviews with Matt Bourne, aka Doink the Clown. Loads of interviews, so once a week interviews will be going up on our Patreon page, so please do get involved. And remember, if you like the Power Slam podcast on YouTube, you can listen to it one day early on Patreon, and on Patreon means you can download the app and listen to it on the go as well. So thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you've had a good weekend. Sorry for the lateness of this podcast. We will be back to normal this week because Sandra and I are in similar time zones now, so there's no excuse for us to not get things done in a rapid fashion this week.
Yay.
Hope you've had a good weekend. We will speak to you down the line or soon.
Bye.
I'm tired. Bye.
You are. Bye.